and welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, virtually, relationships, and life itself. Our topic today is the internet. How green is it? Have you ever asked that? Well, we have not either. Our ability to be wired or online everywhere at all times within milliseconds comes at an environmental price, an impact that I can guarantee you will surprise if not shock you. What is the true story of the internet and wireless communications, and what can we do about it? In this hour, we will talk with an expert on the topic, how green is the internet, understanding our impact virtually. Today on An Organic Conversation, we're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palmar. Mark, you were telling us about a really interesting observation you had in your travels.
Well, I was working in a store this past week, and I was drinking a kombucha for my lunch, and I went to recycle the bottle, and I said, "Oh, where's the recycling?" And they said, "We don't recycle glass here." And I said, "And it's like, have you ever had those moments where you feel like there's like someone's putting a wrench in the gears, and they stop, and you're like, I don't understand what you just said. Like maybe you're speaking a foreign language.
What?
Wait, they don't recycle glass. Do they recycle paper?
They do recycle some cardboard. Yes, but it was just like." Well, those words just came out so freely. I was just like, I don't understand this. This is just part of my normal life. And yet there are places in the United States that don't have
a dialed in infrastructure
for recycling. Correct.
Yeah. Positively.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm always surprised when national chains of natural food stores have not figured out how to compost. You know, we have a great show coming up next week about the waste of food, and not just does it end up in landfill and creates methane, it also is costing us $160 billion a year as a society. 25% of everything we actually buy at home for our home use gets thrown out before it gets eaten. But if you want to compost anything at a store level, it's most often not possible. And that's also, we are throwing away soil.
And, you know, interestingly enough, I was just at a coffee shop that does compost today.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Well, I feel really fortunate to have lived in cities that have the same values that I like to live, right, where we do compost here in San Francisco. And living in New York, exactly. When you walk down to Union Square in New York, where they have the big farmers market, they actually have recycling bins outdoors, right? Which is really rare. I mean, even in San Francisco, it's hard to find a public recycling bin. There are lots of trash bins, but there are a lot of places that are modeling these values. I forget, though, that this is kind of ahead of the curve. There probably are more cities around the country than I even realize that are like the experience you had in Montana, mm-hmm. that they don't recycle glass. Maybe they don't recycle plastic. We don't know. But they're you know, coming around to that trend, but they're still not quite where we're used to.
Yeah. And Mark, you always say there has been such great work been done thus far, and we have lots of more opportunities coming at us every day.
Yeah, no, and that's the great thing. And there's just so many things that we just forget about, we don't understand about how the world works. You know, I know every day I'm learning something, so it's just interesting to see how things can change, and they will.
I think it gives us a good opportunity to look at what else we can do, right? I know when I'm out and about and I can't throw away a glass bottle in a city that I know has recycling, I'll carry it in my handbag until I get home so I can sort it myself. There are a lot of things like that that I
And it is about. April coming to a city near you on fast toes.
What, so, did you just look at the calendar or something?
No, it's April is Earth Month Awareness.
Earth Awareness Month.
Yes, Earth Awareness Month. That's a hard one to say for me. Earth Awareness Month. Can you say that, Mark?
In German?
So there are lots of things, you know, we can do the everyday, you know, use the leftovers of your vegetables to make stock. If you have produce, freeze it so you can use it for smoothies later before it completely rots and then you have to throw it out. And when you throw it out, you know, maybe consider creating a compost bin or putting it into a compost bin backyard or on the street if you're part of that. And many cities offer that now because, again, it's soil and it's part of your budget. There's lots of things in the kitchen alone that we can do, which also then saves packaging, big deal.
Mark, you travel. I know you don't travel without a mug instead of using
water bottle, mug,
plastic cups over and over and over
again. Plates, bowls.
Dozens a day.
Yeah. Can I actually jump in on what you just said, Helga? You were saying there are lots of things that you can do to reduce packaging. And that reminds me of this really wonderful episode that we did last year on Ingredients, which is a zero packaging, zero waste store in, I believe, Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So really great concept. They don't have anything in traditional packaging. You come with your own jars, your own bags, your own boxes to fill it up and take it home. They've gotten some really great press lately. I saw them in a magazine recently and then on a shout out on another green website. So I think their business is doing well.
And in order to save money on your produce and not throw as much away, Mark, didn't you just write a blog about how to best buy,
how to store it. You know, you could save money if you just know a little bit more about your produce. Yeah.
Wonderful. And that's, of course, on our Facebook page. That's an Organic Conversation Facebook, facebook.com/an organic conversation. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And today we are speaking about the mind-bending amount of energy spent on keeping us wireless and virtual. It's what you don't read about the internet age, or very rarely, and what we can do to address a growing issue about the environmental impact of the technology age. How green is the internet? Understanding our impact virtually. That and more when we come back right after this break. Stay tuned.
SPUD stands for Sustainable Produce Urban Delivery. SPUD delivers the highest quality organic produce and the best locally sourced grocery items one can find directly to your doorstep. It's easy, it's convenient, and it supports your local economy. On every delivery day, SPUD takes at least 100 cars off the road that would have otherwise been driving to the grocery store. Reduce your carbon footprint, save time, and save money when grocery shopping with SPUD. Place your order today at spud.com. That's SPUD.com.
Are you a chef, have a catering business, or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, walk right in to Earl's Organic Produce. Anyone can buy directly from us at wholesale prices. You don't have to be a natural food store to enjoy the freshest and most delicious organic produce. We are located on the San Francisco Produce Market at 2101 Gerald Avenue. We look forward to seeing you.
Walk-in hours are Monday through Friday throughout the night from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. Minimum purchase is one box or flat, cash or checks only. For more information, visit earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Come on, come on, play your games. Go on, say my name. You won't stay the same. And don't you know it's just not like me to wait. Cause you give me reasons, but I've heard them all before. This is it.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our topic today is how green is the internet? Understanding our impact. A look behind what many of us take for granted. Internet speed and connectivity. And the ecological footprint it stands on. But as always, we are starting off the show with our weekly tip from the world of health and beauty. Here's our very own Chef Sita, a.k.a. Sita Rani Palomar, and her holistic bite.
Thank you, Helga. Well, the holistic bite is my look at what is healthy in the world, sometimes what we put on our body, sometimes what we put in our body. And this week, I'm going to foreshadow a little bit the wonderful What's in Season we have coming up with Mark Mulcahy later in this hour. But he is going to highlight some of the gems of the spring season, somewhat literally. And in combination with what Mark's going to feature in What's in Season, this week's holistic bite is about making your own vinaigrette. This is one of the simplest things you can make at home, and it's a really great way to add flavor to just about anything that you eat, whether it's your salads, which most people think, obviously, yes, vinaigrette on a salad, but you can also put it in grain dishes, you can put it over beans, pasta, all kinds of things. So making a vinaigrette, essentially what that means is it's making a dressing for vegetables, grains, or beans with vinegar as the base. And the vinegar to oil ratio when you make a vinaigrette, I usually say is about one part vinegar to two parts oil. There are some people who like one part vinegar to three parts oil, and some people who even like equal ratio, one to one. So it really depends on how much of that tangy acid flavor you enjoy. But as I mentioned, are there other ingredients to this vinegar and this oil combo? You usually want to use an emulsifier. And an emulsifier is what allows you to mix these two unmixable liquids, because vinegar and oil, they separate, right? They have different densities. They don't combine, but an emulsifier will help them to be suspended together. And some of the most popular emulsifiers for making a vinaigrette are mustard, for one, honey, and miso. You can also use something like maple syrup. You can find something that has a similar viscosity and use that to suspend the oil and the vinegar together. So in addition to your vinegar, your oil, and your emulsifier, you can also add fresh herbs. And you're just now getting a little peek into the window of how many different combinations you can come up with this. So the way that you put this together is you start by mixing your vinegar and your emulsifier together. Whisk those two together, and you'll get kind of a semi-solid mixture. And then you stream in the olive oil or whatever oil you're using while you continue mixing. And then that's how you get that perfect consistency all the way through. Another great way to do this, if you want kind of a no muss, no fuss way, is to put the ingredients in a mason jar, close it, and shake it up until it's all combined. And then you can add your salt and pepper, you can add your herbs afterwards. And like I said, the combinations are completely endless. And I'm going to give you a couple of my favorites just to get you started, and I hope that it inspires a lot for you. But I make a balsamic tarragon vinaigrette that combines really sweet and syrupy aged balsamic with a Dijon mustard, some dried tarragon leaves, and olive oil. And I put that over lentils and arugula. And it is such a great combination. It's a unique way to use a vinaigrette that doesn't just rely on the leaf. I also do a honey hazelnut that uses grated shallot, dried thyme, white wine vinegar, and hazelnut oil, and that is really good with an arugula and pear salad. You can also keep things really simple by doing lemon juice and olive oil over like a mushroom parsley salad with romaine. You can add garlic. You can do the same thing over a bulgur salad, which is essentially like tabbouleh, and we had a really fantastic tabbouleh recipe from Eden Foods that we posted on our Facebook page last week. So check that out, and I really do hope that you found some inspiration in these many combinations for a vinaigrette and are encouraged to bring out some bright flavors in your grains and legumes and pastas and spring lettuces. That's this week's Holistic Bite.
Thank you, Sita. You had me at mustard.
Well, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it is a stereotype, but mustard is a big deal in Germany. I grew up with lots and lots of mustard. And honestly, who doesn't like a nice honey mustard vinaigrette or, you know, dressing?
To dip pretzels in?
I eat it on cereal. I mean, it's just, there's nothing, you can't go wrong, really.
I think you ought to give your Facebook recipe on Facebook for your cereal with honey mustard dressing.
Or chocolate. No, but yeah, really, I think the mustard as an emulsifier is such a nice, subtle note, especially grainy mustard that has little seeds. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait, Mark, for your what's in season coming later of combining the two today.
The holistic bite,
the world of vinegars and dressings.
I've made dressings at home added mustard or honey. I didn't know that was the reason I was adding them. I thought it was just for flavor. I didn't know that was actually, there was a physical reaction happening, and that's the reason, that's one of the reasons that you would put those together to, you know, bring those all together as an emulsifier. So that's very fascinating. And then I think we've got to get our radio show on camera, because if anybody would have been able to see Sita describing grating the cheese, pouring the oil. Literally, her hands were as if she was pouring, oil into a bowl
while
mixing it up. And I was like, oh, she needs to be on camera for people to be able to see this.
Well, Mark, as somebody who really does love to stick with the honeys and the mustards, you should try miso as an emulsifier because that'll be a really exciting new flavor for you. I worked with a chef who that was kind of her go-to emulsification ingredient. So she used to make this you can use nut butters, for example. You could use tahini, which is a sesame nut butter, and miso and lime juice and shoyu, which is like a fermented soy sauce. Mm-hmm. And that makes a really great Asian flavor. You could even put some grated ginger, some ginger juice in it, and put that over Asian-inspired greens or vegetables. It's really just there are endless possibilities, and there's no reason to buy dressing. Just make your own.
I'm going
to
show you. So, yes.
We'd like to see that.
And it is about ingredients, as always. The Holistic Bite is brought to you by the natural beauty company Echo Bella, offering a wonderful line of body care products and intelligent cosmetics. And, you know, when we talk about ingredients, half of what you mentioned is actually in Echo Bella products. It sounds like because everything we put in our bodies ends up in our system, whether we eat it or whether we put it on our skin. But I know they work with nut butters and all kinds of food grade, you know, wonderful ingredients.
Well, I'm not necessarily sure they're putting nut butters in, but they are using apple cider vinegar, which is a great example because it's very, when you use it topically, it helps to rebalance the pH on your skin after you wash your face so that you can get back to that layer of protection.
Well.
Apple cider vinegar I did a whole holistic bite on that. It's so great for you. Mm-hmm. They use that. They also use the essential oils of a lot of the herbs that I talked about because essential oils are just phenomenal at health and healing.
Yes. So. And of course, all of Ecobella products are always preservative-free, gluten-free, and cruelty-free. Check it out, ecobella.com, and let us know what you think. That's ECCOBELLA.com.
And Helga, I think it'd be great if you would put your nut butter face cream recipe on the Facebook page. You were talking.
Probably an old
German recipe, isn't it?
It is. Yes. Yeah. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And spring is here. And we've already had some fascinating guests and topics here on the show in the first 3 months of this year. You can check out all of our shows as podcasts on anorganicconversation.com or on iTunes. And of course, follow us on facebook.com/anorganicconversation for produce tips, recipes, and much, much more. And we love to receive your comments and questions. You can send us those in an email to share@anorganicconversation.com. And that brings us right to the topic today. How does all this technology work? Email, Google, wireless communication, smartphones, the internet. Today, how green is the internet? Understanding our impact virtually, our topic. Did you know just how much energy is needed to power our infrastructure for data and connection? Data centers are using an astonishing amount of energy every second and are projected to surpass the airline industry as a greenhouse gas polluter by 2020. Patrick Forden is an expert on the topic and also the founder of Percepticon, a full-service internet and website solution company that offers energy-efficient solutions for individuals and companies alike. How green is the internet? Understanding our impact, virtually our topic today. Welcome, Patrick.
Thanks. Hi guys, how's it going?
So great to have you on, Patrick.
It is really great. So
great to be here.
Yeah, Patrick, nearly everybody in the United States uses the internet in some capacity, some more than others, or an iPhone or something. And
it's great. It's so helpful, right?
I'm on it right now. And it's great. And I have to admit that I don't know how this works, but I don't know how a phone works either. But I don't know how this works or the impact of me turning on my computer and looking for information. And I think, there might be a few other people like me out there. So what is the story? What is the effect of us having this unlimited internet at our fingertips all the time?
Well, you're right. We're using this every second of every day, whether we realize it all the time or not. You have your smartphone, your computer, your television, your phone service. Everything's running over the internet now. And, it leads to a necessity for immediate response. Everybody expects to get get the answer to their request immediately. And that means that servers have to be running 100% of the time. And a lot of times they're sitting waiting for requests and wasting energy.
So wait, what does that mean? You say these servers.
Yeah, exactly. How does it even work?
What does that mean? Because I have to say, I always felt like everything in the internet, because it comes to me wirelessly, all exists in a wireless universe. Like the data is literally hanging in the molecules of the air. But that's just not true.
Well, when you do something on your computer or your phone, it basically sends a question over the internet to a server. The server gives you an answer. So when that server gives an answer, you get the information you're looking for. So if you're doing a search on Google, it gives you back a list of results. So for that to happen, these servers sit there and they wait for a request to come in, and they may be sitting idle for, you know, an hour before that, prospectively, running at 100% energy capacity, just to answer your one question an hour later.
And a server is a physical object?
Yeah, that was my question too. Yeah, when you talk about servers, we are talking about major data centers with thousands or tens of thousands of machines, of computers that are waiting our inquiry to then fire back the answer. How does it get there? I don't even really understand when I, you know, send something wirelessly. Where does it go from my physical phone?
There are about 3 million data centers, and often when you make a request, your request goes through, you know, a dozen or 15 of them, maybe. Can be anywhere from 3 to 25.
Through an antenna,
25.
Just like, you know.
Through an antenna, then through wires, then through, you know, various data centers hitting various pieces of equipment that are all running and utilizing energy. And basically, again, running at 100% all the time.
And so that process of pushing a button somewhere around the world, having it go from A to B to C, from an antenna to a server to a subserver to some server that filters out what kind of answer could be created, to then looking up the answer and shooting the answer back at you or whatever you may be doing on the internet, all happens in a millisecond of time. So the capacity of technology that's behind this, because if you look at if you look at advertisements on TV, it's all about server speed, from home use to your phone to whatever. The biggest component in this, you know, argument of who you should go with is how fast you will receive that information. That comes at a price.
Yeah, and the sentiment in the industry is that if your response is delayed at all, you lose. And the cost of that is energy consumption, and not having a way to power down servers, right. Keep things, you know, running at a lower energy consumption.
Yes, we want to talk about what can be done and actually that could address this. But just to frame the challenge, I was in my introduction saying that by 2020, the entire server world is expected to surpass the entire airline industry as a greenhouse gas contributor. That is mind-boggling. And we have another example around Google that you shared with us before the show. Just as one internet provider or search engine, Google uses what kind of amount of energy?
Well, we saw one report that shows that they use about 5% of the energy consumption in the country. I'm not sure if that's an exact statistic or not. We also see, you know, that most, with 3 million data centers, most data centers use about, just by way of example, use about the same amount of energy as a small, medium-sized town.
And each, you know, data center?
Each data center.
And there are 3 million.
And there are 3 million of them.
Wow.
So that's 3 million additional towns, essentially.
Yeah, and each data center can have hundreds of thousands of servers. You know, some are bigger, some are smaller. But, you know, on average, there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of servers there. Google runs, last I heard, something like 700,000 servers.
So, Patrick, you were saying when we were talking beforehand that in addition to this need to be on 24/7, essentially a lot of these waiting idly to serve us, there's another issue that's happening, because hundreds of thousands of these servers are sitting in a closed location and generating a lot of heat.
That's right.
So what's the problem there?
The problem is you have to get rid of the heat. For one, you have to replace it with cool air. So there are a variety of strategies that are being employed. There are, you know, architectural techniques to use cold aisle containment where the cold air is pushed in and the hot air is pushed out. There are economizer approaches where you can bring in outdoor air that is cooler and actually use that instead of generating cold air by heat and other methods. And then getting rid of the heat, there are some very interesting things happening there. We have a data center in Finland that is actually dissipating or taking the heat and piping it into nearby neighborhoods to heat homes. I know IBM is looking at that at some data centers in Washington as well, and I'm sure that this is practice that most big companies are looking at.
So. Yeah, that reminds me. In Germany, after the waste stream, which is, you know, way, way, way recycled and down, and we have the Grüne Punkt, yet the company is responsible for their own packaging, all that. But whatever is left over gets burnt in small, really small town-specific trash burning places with high, high efficient filters. So the air that comes out is actually no longer really an issue at all in terms of air pollution. And that heat is being used to heat small homes. Same idea with data centers. That infrastructure now being tested is not established yet, Sita.
So Patrick, you kind of alluded to a couple of things that are being done to help mitigate these problems that we're hearing about. But when you take a look at some of the suggestions like infrastructure things that help to cool down or piping the heat out to heat homes, what percentage of data centers are doing these smart ecological solutions? If we're talking about 3 million in the world, how many of them are actually just generating a lot of waste?
There is an increased awareness. I think that new data centers being built are adhering to newer best practices and looking at energy efficiency as a primary concern. The problem, I think, exists with data centers that have been around for several years or decades that need to be retrofitted, that are using old facilities or old techniques. And it's really difficult to bring these energy saving processes or practices into those data centers.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Halberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And with us is Patrick Forden, an expert on more sustainable solutions for our connectivity. How green is the internet? Understanding our impact virtually, our topic today here in this hour. And Patrick Forden is also the founder of Percepticon, a full-service internet and website solution company that actually offers energy efficient solution for individuals and companies alike. We want to hear more about what the individual can do because, the numbers are staggering. Our connectivity and our need for immediate access to data, not just a challenge in the energy consumption of servers, 3 million data centers around the world with hundreds of thousands of servers at times, but also the heat that is being created, which takes additional energy to get rid of in those centers. And the problem with the heat is that those otherwise would overheat, right? Is that as simple? Those data centers would just...
That's right. There's an operating temperature range for the equipment that's running. And one of the things that's also happening is they're trying to build hardware that will run at a higher temperature range as well, so that the heat can be higher and you don't have to cool it as much. So that's one thing that's being done from the hardware perspective.
Well, we want to learn what else we can do. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
At Eden Foods, we've always strived to have a strong, positive impact on farming practices and food processing techniques. As the oldest natural and organic food company in North America, our business practices and products endeavor to contribute to a peaceful evolution on Earth. We encourage everyone to be knowledgeable, discerning, and proactively involve buyers, as we are. Look for organic grains, beans, beverages, and more by Eden Foods at your local co-ops, natural food stores, and online at edenfoods.com.
Want to feel your absolute best this spring, full of energy, clarity, and health? Join Bowman College founder Dr. Ed Bowman at our Vitality Fasting Retreat for the ultimate therapeutic mind and body cleanse. Detoxify, renew, and start fresh through a fun and rejuvenating four-day retreat at the beautiful Stillheart Institute in Woodside, California. The Bowman College Vitality Fasting Retreat is held May 16th through the 19th, and space is limited, so sign up today. For more information, visit bowmancollege.org. That's BAUMAN college.org.
Are you committed to green, socially responsible, and sustainable business practices? Percepticon can help with eco-friendly internet solutions, website design services, e-commerce solutions, mobile apps, and high-performance internet hosting for your business. Percepticon is a full-service agency that specializes in web consulting, strategy, and technology development so you can successfully communicate with your audience. Lighten your tech footprint in a green hosting environment. Call Percepticon today at 925-937-9000 or visit them at percepticon.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Today we are discussing the internet. How green is it? Understanding our virtual impact on constant exposure to or accessibility to data. With us is Patrick Forden, the founder of Percepticon, an expert on the topic of energy use. Again, a search engine, just to put it in perspective, such as Google uses a significant amount of the energy in the country, all data centers in the world, or is that in the U.S., Patrick? World or U.S. are supposed to surpass the entire airline industry by 2020 as greenhouse gas polluters. So a big challenge that we usually don't see anything about, really. This conversation is not yet happening, although much is happening behind the scenes to address it.
Yeah, and so Patrick, you were talking about how older data centers, it's harder to make them green, and a lot of new ones are either building servers that can have a higher temperature, or they're doing different cooling things like they did in Finland. Is that a small percentage, or is that a large percentage? What's really going on out there right now?
Well, I think it's probably not a majority. I think that the interest in improving energy efficiency has to be adopted at a very important level.
And mandated maybe too. What can we do on a household level? What can I do tonight? Ultimately, whether or not I go on the internet, you're saying that those servers keep the information ready for us, right? 24/7. They're on standby. They're waiting. And I can't really access that. How much am I contributing to that energy use on a home basis? And can I somehow slow down my request? Because honestly, I would be willing to wait for 5 seconds if I knew that if everyone did and we would save whatever, 10% or 20% of the energy. Yeah, of course I can wait a little bit. Maybe not the old, but, we are talking seconds away would have a direct impact on energy savings. Is that right?
Yeah, it would. You know, for example, you know, adopting these better practices, data centers can save, 70% of the energy consumption that they're currently utilizing. And that's just doing what can be done now.
And what are some of those things?
Those include economizer type designs where you're bringing in outside air, cold aisle containment, other practices, air plenum corridors around a data center, various things that, using lower consumption equipment, et cetera. It has to be a commitment. And from the perspective of an individual who's using the internet, the only way really to affect change is to be an advocate for change.
And ask the questions, right? I mean, whoever is hosting
your... Ask the questions. Use the internet to affect that change. You know, build a movement. Communicate with your providers and internet companies that you deal with.
Because we are talking about server energy, what can I do with my computer at home other than being an advocate for it? But does my use of my computer actually affect what's happening the moment the information leaves the house or comes to the house? Like, how can I, is there anything I can do, keep it more, keep the computer less on maybe, but?
Not necessarily. I mean, you can deal with the consumption that you actually utilize in your own home. But as far as what the data center is consuming,
there's no effect on
it's sitting there idle waiting for you to ask it a question and for it to give a response. And the only way to improve that is to advocate for change and bring in new ways of handling, maybe power on, power off virtualization.
Oh.
Well, and what about, Patrick, I said at the beginning that I had this idea that all of the information just kind of hangs in the air somewhere, which isn't true. But what about the use of the cloud? You mentioned before when we were talking that using the cloud effectively may be a better way to reduce the amount of energy that's being used and maybe not used efficiently, or certainly not used efficiently by these servers.
Yeah, and you know, the idea of the cloud kind of gives people this idea that it's a natural one with nature kind of thing. And the reality is basically cloud computing is virtualizing pieces of hardware to do multiple things, is a really quick summary of what it is. And that does save a lot of energy. That can save anywhere from 25 to 70% of energy in itself, because you're taking one piece of hardware and doing multiple things with it. That actual practice can come up another level and actually virtualize power management features on the same servers that are running all of these different things. Because what we're looking at right now is the typical server utilization is about 6% on average, somewhere between 6 and 12%. That means that there's 90% waste that is taking place.
Waiting to be ready to make sure that if anything comes...
Because if you have a website or an internet type of functionality that has to deliver information back to requests, you have a situation where you're using servers that are positioned to have to meet your peak needs. Okay, so if you're trying to meet your peak needs and your lower needs are about 10% of that, sure, you can bring your server utilization down. Instead of running 100% of the hardware all the time, bring your utilization down, your hardware power on down to 20%, and just keep it riding, you know, enough above that where, you know, you have a reasonable power up time.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, that awareness will shift and change it. We always say, know the story of your food or know the story of your skincare. It sounds like the story is know your story, because it's really not being publicly discussed. When we heard about an article that you're writing that we will actually put up on facebook.com/inorganic conversation, you'll find that on our Facebook page, about the challenge of energy consumption in the internet age. I was flabbergasted to see those numbers for the first time. And I thought, you know, we are so with the nose on the ground working that we would have heard about it in one way or another. But this topic needs to be communicated. And hopefully, just as there are eco seals and organic seals for food, hopefully there will be kind of energy efficient standards for hosting and server environments that companies can use. So it's no longer about how many milliseconds it takes for the information to get to you, but how green has it been in the process. I think that's really, that sounds like would be the goal to achieve.
And I like what you're saying, Patrick, about being an advocate, because us as individuals, we can't really go to a server and say, use less energy. But what we can do is we can go to our employer and say, you know, I'd love to talk about how we're having all of our data hosted. Maybe we can speak with a company that has some of these eco-friendly solutions to reduce the impact. And that is the work that you're in at Percepticon.
Exactly. Yeah, we're always looking for ways to improve the energy efficiency. And we're, you know, likewise, like Helga's saying, is we're shocked with what we discover is going on in this industry.
Yes. So again, ask for the story behind what you're using, what you're eating, what you put on your body, and where you get your data from. I think it's an absolutely important critical question, not just worthwhile, but critical questions. Who is hosting your website, and what is that company's commitment to green? Fascinating topic. Thanks for coming in today, Patrick. Really great to shine light on that.
Thank you so much.
Mark.
Well, I'm just wondering, and it could be the same answer. It could be the same answer as far as pesticides or GMOs or any of that kind of stuff. Is it just that the companies have been unaware of their energy consumption, or is it just that it's now they are being aware that there's new ways to do it?
It's not on the radar. I think the cost of the energy is so low that it does. There's not a lot of motivation to make it better.
But if that becomes an advertisement tool to say, you know, we have the greenest, if Yahoo as another search engine would say, we have the much greener data because we can prove that this is what we do for energy mm-hmm. consumption mm-hmm. and we are half of that of our competitors. You know, I would use that hypothetically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever.
And the major companies, they are absolutely pioneering new energy saving data centers. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. Again, Patrick Forden of Percepticon, thank you and for coming into the studio. And we will continue this conversation and check out the article, facebook.com/inorganic conversation. Coming up here is something that brings you energy. It's produce.
Of course.
It's what's in season produce.
Always.
With our produce expert, Mark Mulcahy, when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Hi, my name is Peter Van Stolk, and I'm the CEO of Spud.com. Spud was founded on the belief that fresh, organic foods should be made easily accessible to everyone. Spud stands for Sustainable Produce Urban Delivery, and we do just that, delivering 100% organic produce and high-quality grocery items to homes and offices throughout the San Francisco Bay Area, Los Angeles, Seattle, and British Columbia. Visit us at Spud.com.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our topic today, how green is the internet? Understanding our impact virtually. A fascinating story that, again, you can follow on our Facebook page, facebook.com/inorganic conversation. Our guest, Patrick Forden, with some disturbing statistics of how much energy is used for our need for constant access to data and the efforts that are being made to reduce that energy consumption and make it green data, hopefully. We're talking about green data in forms of leaves and broccoli roses and and Mark is smiling. He is what's in season, the update of what's going on in the world of produce, fruits and vegetables coming into the wonderful month of April. He is Mark Mulcahy with What's in Season.
Well, it is officially spring now, you know, I mean, spring. That has occurred. And so now it's the time for young spring vegetables and things like that. And even if you are still buried under snow and like in some parts of the East Coast are, there is spring vegetables available coming from California and they will be coming from your local area in a month or two. But now's the time to start looking for them. And I'm talking like baby lettuces and things like that. And so, of course, we've got Earl Herrick, the voice of the market from Earl's Organic Produce in San Francisco on the line. Earl, are you there with us?
Hey, Earl. Hey, how y'all doing?
Hi, Earl. Happy spring.
No kidding, huh?
This must be so happy for you this time right now. Everything is coming in.
So, and it continues to get better every day.
Well, that's because baseball season's about ready to start, but let's keep on the topic here. Hey, Earl, so right now is the time when, you know, some of the small lettuces, the tender lettuces are coming in, and some of the other spring vegetables. Why don't you give us a little update on what's going on at the market with those?
Well, it is the right time. You know, we're in, you could say, early spring, you know, end of March, early April. A lot of the local product has not really started, but if you got it in a month or two ago, which you might be able to do under little hoops, under some plastic, which a lot of the local growers in California have done, you get the benefit from all these little, you know, you might be able to call them heirloom, but some have been around a while, some are more recent. But what's wonderful about them is they give you an incredible assortment of color and shapes and texture and flavor. And I'm talking about these little lettuces that are probably no bigger than your hand or your fist. And they could be the ever-popular Little Gems. They could be Lola Rosa, Perella, Marvel of Four Seasons. I mean, some of them you and I have been seeing for years. And this stuff is really wonderful right now because it's spring and it's young and it's very tender. And for me, there's hardly anything that speaks spring than a good, wonderful salad.
Well, and, you know, Earl, you're talking about some of these smaller lettuces, and it is a different – there's lettuce available to us in the supermarket year-round.
Yes. Yes.
But this is a different – I don't want to say animal, but a whole different set of produce because it is more tender. It does have a whole different flavor for a salad than, you know, lettuces that like romaine and different things that you're eating the rest of the year.
Well, yes, you know, when you have year-round lettuce, you're talking about the larger farms that are marketing directly into the wholesale market or big institutions, and so they're going to focus on the red and green butter, red leaf, green leaf, and romaine, and maybe even a red romaine, and that is it. And so those are chosen mostly because they've developed the strains that can handle shipments.
Yeah.
So what's wonderful about these ones we're starting to talk about is that they're tender. You could not ship those across country or even a couple hundred miles. I mean, you could, but you're not going to get the benefit of really the reason you grow this particular type.
So, Earl, since we're talking about, since you're thinking of salad now and tender baby lettuces, what would you add to that salad of baby tender lettuces?
You know, what I love this time of year to go with that are the young chards that come out.
Some of my favorites.
I mean, right now, because they're not going through this heavy winter anymore, there's this wonderful spring, little shower here and there. The temperatures are not too strong, so they're not going to get bitter. And what I do is I harvest a little of those and cut them up or tear them up. I love to put some baby turnips, Tokyo turnips, slice those real, real thin. I love to use some early avocados. I'm going to take them all here, Mark.
how could I tell?
One of everything for Earl.
and you know, that I'm talking about a fuerte there, which is not as rich and oily as a Haas, which works perfect. It melds perfectly with these other young, kind of nuanced flavors. And then for me, I throw almonds. I slice these almonds in, and for me, that's a salad to die for right there.
And so you have you must have a huge bowl. Helga, what about you? What do you like to throw?
I'm just waiting for Earl to start a vegan produce-based restaurant. I mean, everyone, can you imagine if a produce expert such as Earl or you, Mark, if you guys got together and created just like super simple. Well, it sounds wonderful. And I can only add to that. I love texture and different temperatures. I like my salad really room temperature. So envisioning spring greens that are all saying, yay, life. I would maybe stir fry some onions, some fine chopped onions to that and put them in warm. Or maybe that and some citrus. Pixies are in, the very first pixies of the season that I've seen. Wonderful. Avocado is always great. I need some, you know, something to bite on to balance that kind of spring green, really tender, wonderful, yummy greenness. Something hearty.
Like what are you seeking?
Yeah, grain, something like that. Wild rice.
I think all of that sounds really, really great. And for me, when these lettuces are out, which I feel like is an all too brief window, I just want to be as present as possible to the flavor and the texture of them. So I'm really satisfied with the lettuces themselves and a simple vinaigrette.
You're such a purist.
I love hearing that, though.
No, but really, you know, you can bring flavor in with the vinaigrette. Just eat the tender lettuces without any other vegetables. If you really want to spice up, you could add some herbs, like some fresh chives to it. But for me, oh man, the simpler the better with this.
See, that's you, and then the German mushes it all up. Oh, sorry.
Well, and actually the great part, you know what I really loved listening to all of you about this time of year is that you can do any of those things and be completely satisfied with these very tender young lettuces. And so I love it. Earl, that's thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Any time, but Mark, I want to hear, what about you?
Yes. Well, Earl, you took the Tokyo turnips, which are some of my favorites, and then, of course, I would go with the Fuerte. But I like Helga, like lots of different flavors and things like that. So I loved his idea of the warm onions. I think that's a great idea. But I would probably put some fresh steamed beets in there.
Ooh.
I would add a little citrus, and like Helga, I might add some grapefruit to those young lettuces, and actually avocado, young lettuce, and grapefruit with a little teeny vinaigrette, because it does have that sour and fat component, is almost perfect for me.
Okay, let's make salad now.
Yeah, so let's make salad.
We almost out of time anyway. Thank you, Earl. Oh, spring
Thanks,
is here.
Earl.
I'm so happy for you.
Can't wait to have a bowl of salad
for
with
us.
I agree. We'll talk
with you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, so and Mark, great. You know, when you put citrus in your salad, you can capture all of that citrus juice and use it as the acid in your vinaigrette. Just thinking ahead.
There's another little tip.
So before we wrap, Helga,
yes.
Do you have an organic moment for us this week?
Yeah, it is about spring, actually. The songbirds are back. So as we are talking spring lettuce, for the rest of the country, I'm happy to announce that spring is here, even if you don't experience it quite yet. In your neck of the woods, it is happening here for sure in California, San Francisco Bay Area, and that means that it's coming to a town near you very soon. You just wait. I woke up to a symphony of songs by half dozen varieties of birds the other morning, followed by a stroll with my dog where both of us bathed in the scent of blooming trees, bushes, and flowers, and the busy, busy sound of bees. And then at our favorite coffee shop, every other dog was a puppy. And the sun on my face made my morning tea a moment to remember. Spring always gives me the feeling that everything will be well at the end. It's a sense that we don't need much to be happy. A good tea, some sunshine, friendship, community. So look out of your window tomorrow morning and try to count the little indicators that announce the spring of 2013. I hope you can feel the excitement of longer days rising inside of you, realizing that spring makes your window at home truly a window of opportunity.
That sounds like a really great morning. No, it really does. I like what you said, is it's a reminder that you don't need all that much to enjoy what's around you, right? Especially when the sunshine first comes out. I feel like I can smell the sunshine when it comes out.
Well, the abundance is in your face right now. If you just, you can feel that nature is moving on. Spring lettuces are coming in. It's like on every level, you know, it's life. Life is happening.
Well, even
it's
the other day beautiful. When I was in the snow, when I was traveling in the snow, I was stood outside one day and I had just a little bit of the warmth of the spring sun on my face. And even that was enough, right? It's cold out. I've got a coat on, but I could just feel that warmth. And you could just, you know, that shift is starting
exactly.
to happen.
The sunshine is longer. It's a slightly different angle. The sun has a little bit more power. So whatever is happening around you, that would be one of those little indicators. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is a really great point, because even if the air is cold, the sun is warm. And
tell.
If you get yourself in the right spot, you're just like, you can sit outside and eat your
our
tender
bodies,
baby lettuce salad and feel like you're in total heaven.
I love that. Our bodies know no matter what, right? You can sit in 10 feet of snow. Your body knows that it's springtime, that it's just weeks away. You can feel it. Mm-hmm. You can literally feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. Underwriting production, Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
And you can follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/anorganicconversation.
We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.